Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro of the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
On this edition of Into the Fray, I have on with me author and story collector John Olson. And John, this is your fifth visit to ITF. And actually, I think you called in for 200 for one of the Paramalgamation episodes. That was more of a call-in situation. And so you've been on the show a number of times. You've got 5 books out, so that's why you've been on 5 official times. He's got 5 books out, guys, in the Stranger Bridgerland book series, and we are here today to share some of the encounters shared with John from his newest book, that is book 5, titled Beyond Stranger US, and this is, as the subtitle states, true paranormal stories from across North America. And John, before we get started, just a quick thanks to you and your wife, Annie, for putting on the highly successful Bridgerland Para-X Conference. I was there. I got invited, which was so amazing of you guys. I was there chatting with people, signing books, and I, of course, spoke. And that was my first speaking engagement. And I think it went pretty darn well. And I was very nervous, but once I got started, I think it's like anything else, you kind of roll with it. So I just wanted to say thanks again for that, and I am so looking forward to next year. This year's was so successful that it looks like we will be doing a 2-day event next October. So awesome.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming. It was such a blast. I'll tell you, it was, you know, it's always stressful to get ready, and I thought the day would be stressful too, but it was just so much fun talking with you, talking with, you know, the other people, the other speakers, and you did such a wonderful job. You would have never known that you haven't been doing this forever, but, you know, the only difference is you can see people's face rather than on the podcast where you can't see their face. But you did an amazing job, and I just wanted to say congratulations to you on your awards and everything. The podcast is going awesome, and I'm humbled to call you a friend, Shannon. You're just amazing, and Annie and I just love you, and we're excited to have you again next year. It'll be great.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, I was so honored to be there. And you know what? It's funny you bring that up about how you felt about the day, because that was actually something I had jotted down just to ask you, because I've, of course, never attempted the monumental task of organizing a conference. And I was wondering then, and you already answered, you know, how was the day for you guys after months and months and months of all of this work? And you said you actually did enjoy it. So that makes me feel better.
Yeah, we did. We had a great time. I mean, like I said, of course it's stressful whenever you run anything like that, but it went off without a hitch, which was awesome. And the 2 days before, I had a nightmare, one nightmare that nobody showed up, and then a nightmare that too many people showed up. So I was a little nervous, but it ended up being great, and the speakers were all great, and we had a lot of, I mean, for the first time, we had a lot of people show up. So it went off really well, and again, to have you as the keynote speaker was awesome. So we really appreciate you.
Oh gosh, it was amazing. So that makes sense to me, the Goldilocks nightmare, where it's too little or too much, right? But it was
Right.
just right. It
It
did.
was
It
just right.
turned out really, really well. We had some amazing people in there all day long. I thought, well, I don't know if anyone's how this works with the whole table thing, and do people really come up? And they do. And I met some incredible people with some amazing stories, and I'm sure that you did too.
Yeah, it was awesome. People wanted to come up and share their stories, and just like, when you do the podcast or you write a book, you get people coming to you and bringing stories, and it was the same all day. And it's wonderful to meet like-minded people and get their stories. It was just a lot of fun. I talked to people about their Bigfoot and UFO stories and ghost stories, and so yeah, it was wonderful. I didn't know how many books to order myself, with whether, if I'd order too many for my booth, and I ended up selling out everything, so that, gives me a good idea for the next time. And so yeah, it went well.
Yeah, everybody, just keep an eye out for that. It's going to be at the same location, right? Logan, Utah, Cache Valley Event Center. It was a beautiful building, worked out incredible.
Like you say, my wife Annie, she did so much. She's just amazing to help, and she's great in that kind of area with thinking of the things that I don't. And so she's just fantastic through the whole thing.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. And ditto on the calling you a friend. It was just so funny because I think it really helped break the ice for me, because part of the introduction for me was you brought up the fact that you and Annie have actually driven me a goat from Utah to Las Vegas. And you
Yes, we
all
did.
out there can just guess as to what in the world we're talking about. But that is a true story right there. Speaking of true paranormal
That's right.
stories, that
Yep,
just
I
made
can
me
say
laugh.
I drove a goat that far. Yep, that
Yeah.
was an interesting. Oh, it was fun. That was fun too. So.
Yes, to drive a goat to Shannon LeGros. Okay, you're like, everyone's like, all righty then. And don't even ask me, because I'm not even going to tell you. It's just going to be one of those very strange stories out there in the ether that no one will ever really know what happened or
That's
why.
right.
Well, John, I know a lot of people know you quite well, but just really quickly, I mean, your family still to this day owns a, I think it's over 100-year-old house. It's got some activity. I mean, you grew up in that place. You've had your own experiences. And I imagine that with book 1 to 5, you probably are already working on 6, because it sounds like this collection scenario is just this revolving door for you, and you have plenty of stories that you still have to share with everybody.
Yeah, I do. I still have a lot of stories that I've collected over the years that haven't gone in the books. And then I also, I'm constantly getting people contacting me, which I love, and to interview people and hear about their stories. And so yeah, it just I have actually just started on book 6, and so it just keeps going. It's been great. And like you say, that's how I got started. I grew up in a house that was very active paranormally, and it got me excited and interested in the paranormal and in interviewing people and getting their stories, and it's kind of snowballed, which has been great.
Well, yeah, and I have chosen a few of these stories out of Beyond Stranger US. Of course, this is not the entire book. There are plenty more fantastic tales. And then I know you're going to stick around with me afterward for some Patreon content only. So thank you for that. But let's dive in here. We are first going to go to the state of Montana, and we are going to be hunting monsters.
Yes, and I was glad you picked this one, because this one is, I've got a lot of favorites in my books, and this one I really liked, because it's kind of out there, and it almost has a lot of different things in it from that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I'll get into it. I was contacted by Ed, And the funny thing is, when Ed was talking to me, he reiterated over and over and over again that he's just a normal guy. He's a normal everyday guy. He's, you know, he's like, I don't do drugs. I never did drugs. I, you know, I have drink on a weekend. And you know, he really wanted to make sure I knew that he wasn't crazy because of his story, which obviously I know he's not. Everybody has strange stories, but he had grown up in Montana. He was fourth generation Montana construction worker. He'd been in the military after high school, and he had gotten married. And like I said, he'd done construction for, you know, his whole life. But when he was in his 20s, before he had kids and he was newly married, him and his buddy Jim went hunting. And he'd grown up hunting with his dad and his family, and hunting was, you know, part of growing up in Montana. Him and Jim were in an area near Flathead Lake. It's on the western side of Montana. And they'd been hunting for a few days, deer hunting, and Jim had gotten his deer. Ed was still trying to get his deer. And they got up early and went up on this ridge where they could spot. Basically what it is, you look for your deer and why they're still moving in the morning, and then you try and stalk, get close enough to shoot. And while they're sitting there, first of all, they're sitting there, and all of a sudden, you know, Jim gets his attention and looks at him, and Jim's like, can you hear that? And there was a really weird metallic hum that was just starting to grow, and it got pretty loud. And they couldn't, you know, they're in the wilderness. Nothing that they know of is making that sound. And like, as he's explaining it to me, and he's just like, it's like a weird, really weird metallic hum. It didn't sound like any, you know, machinery he knew, definitely nothing in the wild. And it died down again and disappeared, and they kind of shrugged it off and went back to looking. And after a while, Ed spots a deer between 800 and 1,000 yards, and they watched it, and it bedded down. And so, you know, Ed tells Jim, you know, sit here on the hill and watch. I'll go over. It's about two ridges over. And when I get to the top of the ridge, I'll look at you. You tell me if it's the deer still there or not, and I'll make my way close enough so I can shoot. So Ed gets going, and he makes it over one ridge, and then he's about one ridge away from where the deer is. And he goes down into this little canyon, and it's almost got a bowl kind of in the bottom, and it's a buck brush and then quake and aspen and then some pine trees in the bottom. And as he makes his way through the buck brush, being really quiet as he can, he just gets this really deep, you know, dread feeling inside, a really weird feeling. And he makes his way further in, and he's trying to decide, you know, do I go through these trees or do I go around? Because he's just getting this really weird, creepy vibe from it. And he's like, well, there's a trail right through the middle. It's an easy walk. I won't make very much noise, so I'm going to go through the middle. And as he walks in, he said it felt like it was almost like a cloud went over the sun and it got dark. And all of a sudden, he heard the metallic hum again. And he's looking around, and from in front of him, there was a large pine tree down from him, not very far. And this thing steps out onto the path in front of him from behind this tree. And again, he reiterates to him that he's not crazy. But he says it was really large, about 8 feet tall. It was black, like a shiny, oily black, as he could see the head, and then the body almost seemed to like be pouring into the ground, which was extremely strange. It had two really big almond-shaped eyes in the black that were red, and he said it was like when your headlights hit a animal on the side of the road at night, they glow back at you. It was almost like a version of that, and you know, tail lights from a car. It was just deep red glowing. And the edge of this creature was almost shimmering like a television set on when it has the snow on the television. And he just frozen. And the metallic hum is getting louder. This creature standing in front of him. And he kind of goes into shock, which, you know, anybody would. He says that it just became the sound, seeing this thing, all became just too much for him. And he remembers his vision going down to a pinpoint and falling and feeling like it took him forever to hit the ground. And as he hit the ground, he went out. He completely passes out. The next thing he knows is Jim is over top of him, you know, feeling for a pulse, trying to wake him up. And he kind of comes to, and it's just hazy. He's passed out. He doesn't know what, you know, what's going on. He keeps asking Jim, where did it go? Where did it go? And Jim's like, what are you talking about? What's going on? And he helps him over to a log where he can just sit and get some water and clear out the cobwebs. And he asks Jim what he saw. And Jim says that, well, when you went into the, you went down into this gully, into this little canyon, and I heard the metallic hum again, and then it went away, and then you never came out, and I waited 45 minutes, and when you never came out, I came over to find you, and you're just passed out down here, sprawled on the ground. And so Ed thinks about it and realizes he can't tell his friend what he just saw, because he's having trouble processing it himself. So he convinces Jim to take him back to camp, you know, convinces Jim to leave early, that he's sick. He doesn't feel well, obviously. This is, you know, something really strange. But he had nightmares for weeks after. He even went to the doctor to try and find out why he, you know, if there was something medically wrong with him, and they never could find anything. He said it took him like 4 or 5 years before he would tell his wife what he had experienced. And it wasn't until his boys were older that he finally went back into the woods and started hunting again, when his boys wanted to hunt. And there had not been very many people other than his wife that he'd shared this with. But because of some of the experiences that I've interviewed people with, the monsters in the forest and shadow people, he was kind of looking for answers of what he might have seen. And the eyes are what's really strange to me, because, you know, I've interviewed people who've seen these giant shadow creatures in the woods and everything. But the fact that this was during the day and it had those eyes and that sound and effect on him, it was something I'd never really heard about before. So, but definitely frightening, like scary, scary situation.
Yeah, and if that doesn't prove he saw something really messed up, I mean, it took him years and years to go back into the woods, and it sounded like he really enjoyed hunting, so.
Yeah, that was part of his heritage. That was part of everything. And like I said, it wasn't until his boys were older that he finally went back in. And you know, he what he had experienced for years after was basically like PTSD, having a really traumatic experience, so. But I, to this day, you know, after talking to him and everything, I'm not sure what it is he saw exactly, where it would fall, you know, what it would fall under, or right, what kind of creature or alien or ghost. I have no idea. It just sounded really, you know, something very much out there.
Yeah, because on the periphery, it does sound like a shadow person, but then it has these other, especially physical attributes. Shiny and oily, greasy looking, very strange and gross. And, you know, super tall. But you have also written about the Watchers, which can be, yeah, I mean, 15, 20 feet tall, which is amazing. People right, have seen on ridges when they're out probably hunting. It was a couple of the stories. But the aspect of the weather changing is something that we have heard before. And, of course, we do hear it in some of the 411 cases as well, especially when they go to look for somebody that is missing. We have this weather change, and I find that the hum to go along with it, it really leaves you scratching your head.
Yeah, yeah, it's really strange. Because the hum sound, I've heard people who've seen UFOs have experiences where right before they see the UFO, and this is at least in the wilderness and stuff, they will have a hum, metallic hum, that will go up in pitch until it seems to disappear, and then they will see a UFO. And I've interviewed people who've had that experience, but to have this associated with this creature was very strange. But like you say, it's really, it makes for a great story for sure.
Yeah, that poor guy. My goodness.
I know, right?
You know what? I wonder if he felt like this entity or creature was what made him pass out, or was it, you know, himself, the fear and the stress of the situation?
Right. And it's hard to tell. I think he felt like it was the sound, the visual was just too overwhelming for his whole senses. And that's why he felt like he passed out. Like I said, he even went to the doctor, he said, to get a full workup. And the doctor's like, you know, you don't usually come to the doctor. Are you sick? And he's like, oh, well, I passed out hunting. I want to know. And then did a stress test and everything was fine. I mean, he was in his 20s. He was very physically active being a construction worker. And so, yeah, it's really fascinating and weird for sure.
Yeah. And you wonder if the sound, just boiling it down, would be more of an infrasound type of a situation, which we usually attribute to Bigfoot, but who knows? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, and it's funny because the more I interview people and the more I hear their stories, and the more, you know, you wonder what is it exactly out there in the wilderness, because there's some strange things going on out there.
Yeah, in fact, John, I mentioned you last week when I was talking to Gary Moreland. It just aired last night, but one of his stories, which I wasn't aware of, was a little person story, little people. And it was three of them actually. And he said two, they were totally nude, which it seems like 50-50 if they have clothes on or not, grayish right. skin, totally nude. And then two of them are carrying a little ladder.
And you're just, oh my goodness.
You know, and it's just these super random things that they do. And you're going, yeah. What in the world? Like one of my all time favorites that you've ever shared is that little one that came in and grabbed a guy's book that he had been reading after he fell asleep. I always bring that up because it's obviously one of my favorites. It's always stuck with me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that one's one of my favorites too. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you or not, but about a year ago, I had a woman contact me just to tell me that she had read my book. And when she read that story, she was so excited because her husband told her years ago that while elk hunting in that very same area, he had seen one of these small creatures, and she absolutely did not believe him and called him a liar. And then she read my book and saw that somebody else had seen him. And she's like, I had to apologize to him and everything.
And from the same area. I mean, that's amazing.
Area, so. Yeah.
Yep. I'm fascinated by those little guys. They can nude, clothed. I don't care. I would love to see one someday. That'd right. be great.
I know. That's that. Them and Bigfoot's big on my list.
Heck so. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Well, yeah. let's do a little traveling now to Route 666, which now is renamed. But for quite a number of years, it was called Route 666, and it was very active.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Yes, the Devil's Highway. Teresa, I know it's kind of weird. I keep wanting to say Teresa, but it's Teresa, contacted me. And I was actually really excited because, like you, I've read a lot of stories about Route 666 and seen a lot of shows. But I had not had a personal, you know, one-on-one with somebody who had had an experience. And she wanted to share this story with me. Her and her friend Jill were seniors in high school in 1994. And they lived in Colorado, and Jill's grandparents lived in New Mexico, and they had planned this trip for spring break to go down and visit her grandparents and just have fun down in New Mexico. And Teresa's parents let them borrow their old Ford LTD, which if you know anything about cars, those things are indestructible. That's probably why they let them take them. They're just, you can run those into a wall and they'll still keep going. But so they were planning on leaving, and they ended up leaving later than they had planned on, for different reasons that come up. So it was around a 9-hour drive from where they lived in New Mexico, or where they lived in Colorado, down to New Mexico, where her grandparents lived, Jill's grandparents. So they got a late start and headed down that way. They went through Cortez, Colorado, and from Cortez is where you hit Route 666. And they kind of, when they started on Route 66, they kind of made a little joke about it, you know, being the devil's highway, and they thought it was funny, and they kept going. They ended up stopping in Shiprock, New Mexico, to grab some dinner. It was late, and call both their parents from payphone and grandparents to tell them they were doing okay and roughly about what time they would show up. So they left, and it was late, and headed out across the desert down that, through that way, on Route 666. And they had, you know, they were laughing and giggling, having a good time, like, you know, teenage girls do. And all of a sudden, Teresa noticed something out in the desert, towards their left. And, it was a cloud. It looked like, you know, fog or a cloud or something, but it was glowing fluorescent green. And they kept an eye on it, and they thought maybe it was just some fog out there or something that was getting hit by a light. They got, you know, as they kept going and keeping an eye on it, they got quiet, you know, they got nervous. And this cloud started coming towards them. Teresa was driving and trying to outrun this thing. And before long, Jill was yelling at her to slow down, and she realized she was going 100 to try and keep away from this thing. So she slowed down. This cloud slowed down and was off the road to their left and matching their speed for a while. And she said it was really weird. It was fluorescent green, but then the edge of the cloud as well was really bright green, almost like fluorescent lighting green. And it was about the size of a semi, she said, and it was matching their speed through the desert. And after a few minutes, I mean, they're really nervous at this point. And at this point, it darts in front of them, and now it's on the highway in front of them. And she slowed down to about 60 miles an hour. And Jill's telling her to stop, but she doesn't want to stop out in the middle of the desert. She said she didn't want to stop. She felt like she needed to keep going. And no matter what their speed, this thing is matching their speed in front of them. She said all of a sudden it slammed, you know, it was like it slammed on its brakes. And she didn't. And she ended up going right into this cloud, this green cloud. And Jill screaming and pulling on her arm. And she's just sitting there, still traveling about 60 miles an hour, and the whole car is enveloped in this really green, really weird green mist. And she said she didn't know how long exactly they were in it, and there was a blue flash, and she closed her eyes because it was just really bright. And at that point, she finally hit the brakes and pulled to the side of the road. And she said when her vision cleared, this thing had moved off to the other side of the road and was moving away from them. And they both kind of broke down into tears having this traumatic experience. And after a few minutes, they, you know, she said she pried Jill's nails off of her arm, and they just got going again and got home. They were really weirded. I mean, obviously very weirded out by it. I asked her if they had any ill effects, if they noticed anything, time slip or anything like that. And they said, no, the time seemed fine. They didn't have any physical effects from it. It was just extremely strange and just really weird. And they asked me if I had heard anything like that. And I'd actually heard a few stories of truck drivers seeing this strange green cloud while driving on Route 666. But not that I could remember anyone actually getting inside of it or being inside of it. But it was really strange. Like you say, they've since renamed it because they of the supposedly the bad vibes around calling it Route 666. But from what I can tell, they're still ghost stories, UFO things, and all kinds of strange things that happen along that road.
Yeah, the idea of these sentient clouds or mists is extremely interesting. And actually, we've got W.T. Watson, Travis, he was recently on for his Phantom Black Dogs book, and he's working on a book, basically fogs and mist and clouds in the paranormal. So it's an idea that just it permeates all over. And it's this one is unique because of the fact that it did act so sentient, like it wanted to interact with them, and then goes from the fluorescent green or white, almost white, to then this blue flash.
Yeah. Yep. Something strange. Definitely. You know, you wonder what it was doing or what it is. It's, you know, it, and another place too that I've heard, again, not first person, but heard from other people, that these green clouds are seen also near where Skinwalker Ranch is in the Uinta Basin up in Utah as well. These strange clouds are seen up there as well. So it just makes you wonder what they are and who's controlling them and what they want. And it's fascinating for sure.
Wow. And those are mostly green as well.
Green and blue. Yeah. Ah. There's some green and some blue that are seen up there as well. Yeah. I don't know if any of them right on the Skinwalker Ranch, but definitely around that area, the Uinta Basin. But they get a lot of UFOs up there too as well. So it's very active in all different kinds of paranormal. But there's been those clouds seen in that area as well.
And Teresa and Jill, they didn't feel like they had any lasting effects except for the trauma of it, of course. But no physical effects or anything like that?
Nope, they weren't ill. They didn't get any time dilation, you know, meaning, you know, they were gone for a certain time or anything like that, that they couldn't account for. But, just the experience itself. So, which can you, you know, being just, you know, 18-year-old girls, I can only imagine how frightening that would be anyway, for anybody, let alone just two teenage girls out there.
Right. And it sounded like that was kind of their first big road trip and, you know, out on their own, and look at what happens. The darned mist has to ruin the sanctity of the first ride.
Yep. And she did mention that on the way home, they absolutely would not travel at night, which I don't blame them for that either one bit. So.
Yeah. All right. So this next one, everyone needs to buckle up. And at the same time, you really need to open your mind. And if anybody has any ideas on what in the world is going on in this next one, let me know. Because this one really definitely stood out. And we're going to be heading to Colorado. And this one is titled Lost.
Right. And this one, I was contacted by Garrett. And he had heard me talk on a show about glitches in the Matrix. And this definitely falls under, I guess you would call it a glitch in the Matrix. I can't really put it in any category that I'm aware of, but it was really strange. So Garrett lives in the outskirts of Denver, Colorado, and he works for a company where he delivers uniforms and carpet or rugs. They clean them and he delivers them and picks them up. And he works really early in the morning, which at the time anyway, he worked really early in the morning. And he had his route that he would go on through the week and picking up and delivering uniforms and stuff. And he'd made a few deliveries and he was on his way to his next delivery. What he would usually do with this truck is just sneak through the subdivisions early in the morning because it was a lot quicker than going on the main road all the way around. And the way his job was, you know, he got paid for his job, not the hours. So whatever time he could cut off, he was happy to cut off and be able to go home early. So he would go through these subdivisions. Well, he was approaching this subdivision. It's early in the morning. The sun's not up, but it's light where you can see a little bit, he said. And he's approaching the first turn into this subdivision. And the first thing he noticed was how cold it got inside of his little truck. His delivery truck. He said the closer he got to the turn, the colder it got. It was like somebody dropped the temperature in his truck. And he made the turn, and he said by the time he'd made the turn, it was so cold he could see his breath inside the truck. And he said he turned into the subdivision, and where normally were normal subdivision homes, middle America housing, built in the 80s and 90s, all of a sudden, he's not on that street that he normally is on. He said the houses were replaced by basically dome structures like cement, gray cement houses that were in the igloo, almost the igloo style home. And as he pulled into the subdivision, he comes to a stop in front of one of these houses. And he is super disoriented. He doesn't know where he is. He's like, did I turn the wrong place? What's going on? And he looks, and all the houses are about the same. They're an igloo-style dome house with two, you know, a door, weird door, and two windows. And he's kind of looking around because obviously he's completely lost. His pit in his stomach. He's like, I have no idea what is going on. And he realizes that some of the houses had vehicles in front of them, but the vehicles were not regular cars. He's like, they were military grade Jeep, Hummer kind of things crossed with a Moon Rover and weird domes on them kind of a thing. He's like, this is out of the Jetsons I'm looking at. All of a sudden, you know, in front of the house that he stopped, somebody, he's very aware that somebody is peeking out the window at him. And now he's got disoriented and fear going through his body. And he says, I was having an absolute normal day and I turned the corner and now I'm in a Twilight episode and I have no idea what's going on. So he quickly turns around and leaves the subdivision. As he leaves, he's like, the funny thing that I noticed that stood out was where the red stop sign usually is as you're leaving, the subdivision is replaced by a green sign with scribbles on that I couldn't read, is what he said. It was really weird. He made the turn back out of the subdivision, and all of a sudden, it was cold again, but all of a sudden, I got super nauseous. I pulled to the side of the road just as I turned out, and he's like, I lost my breakfast right there on the road. He gets back in his delivery truck, you know, takes a swig of water, trying to clear out the cobwebs, trying to clear out his mouth. And he looks and turns around and goes back into the subdivision, and it's back to normal. It's the same subdivision that he's driven in, you know, over the years. It's normal. The houses are normal. The cars are normal. The sign's gone. Everything's back to normal. He kind of finishes delivery for the day and goes home and just crashes. It's like, whether it was emotional, physical, whatever it was that he got, you know, obviously he went through something very emotional and very, you know, overwhelming. He said he slept forever to get over this. It obviously never happened again, but he had no idea what happened to him, why he saw things differently. Did he go through a wormhole? Was he just hallucinating? You know, what was going on? And he, you know, part of the reason he contacted me with this story is he was trying, you know, find some answers of what I thought had happened. And I really, you know, your guess is as good as mine. Did he, you know, go through a portal into another dimension? Did he see into something else, something weird like that? But that one is definitely one of those stories that you just get walk away, you know, scratching your head, and which he obviously had. You know, Garrett, he's like, I never really had anything happen since then or anything, but I always wonder what it was that had happened to me that day. It was out there and weird. So
this one was so cool. And it just sticks out. And, you know, you're reading and you see, okay, dome-like structures, all pretty much the same size. And you're like, okay, like old school, like homesteading kind of, you know, right, simple living kind of a situation. But then you get to the vehicles and that kind of strikes that. And then you go, well, what? Because of the sign with this other language that he could not even read, which replaced the very mundane stop sign that used to be there. This one is way out there and I loved it.
Yeah, I did too. And I love the detail that he had. I mean, he was with it enough to, you know, to capture in his mind everything that was going on, and you know, the things, you know, the details, the vehicles and the houses, and just the fear of what was going on. It came across very militaristic for whatever reason, and I'm not sure, you know, and that's what he kind of mentioned, was very, very militaristic, not necessarily, you know, futuristic, but militaristic was how he kind of explained it. So very weird for sure.
Terrifying. Like either way, just absolutely terrifying to even be in that for a few seconds. And then the whole thing with the cab of the truck getting so cold that he could see his breath, you know, those are really interesting little details woven into an already very interesting story.
Yeah. Yep. And it's funny because I've interviewed people who have gone into situations where, you know, they've walked into a building or something, and it's obviously super strange, and it's not where they thought they were going to be. And it's funny how the nausea is a common thread that runs through that. People get sick when they run through something like that. And so it's just fascinating to me how, you know, these people who've never met each other, but they kind of have the same symptoms that happen when they have something strange happen. You just wonder, you know, how it's all connected.
He's probably just lucky he didn't pass out. Like, right. our hunting monsters man, right? Because he was behind right. the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, too, with you have so many people in the United States alone that go missing. You wonder if you got people who go into the situation like that and they don't end up coming back for whatever reason. And
right.
then you wonder if that's not what's happening to some people, but who knows?
Yeah, you would hope they would hook you up with an igloo house and a cool ride, and then they teach you how in the world to read their language. That would be helpful.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, this next one, you know, it kind of was between this one and another one that had a similar creature to the hunting monsters, but it was around someone's house. That was a terrifying one, by the way. Can't wait for you guys to pick this book up. It's got a lot of great stories, but the Yosemite Monster chapter is one where there's most things where I'm going, yeah, I'd like to see that. But then there's subcategories of, well, I would if I had this or this, or I had someone, you know, a group with me, you know, whatever it is. This
right.
is certainly one that would have stipulations, because whatever in the world this is, if there's a lot of these out there, and again, I have already brought up the 411. You know, when you hear stories like this, you're kind of going, if you have this and you have the hunting monsters creature out there in the woods, you've got mist and shadow people and the watchers, and there's no wonder people are going missing in the woods if we've got anything like this stuff out there, right? So, yeah, so Yosemite Monster, what a chapter.
Yeah, this one was fun. It was fun to interview Caden on this one, too. And that was another one, too, where, you know, I've read a lot about Yosemite, and I haven't been able to visit there. I want to someday, but it was nice to find somebody who had an experience there, especially one that was so strange as his. He and his family had gone on a four-day vacation to Yosemite. At the time, he was 14 years old. His older brother, Tim, who was 18, was with them, and then he had a younger sister and his parents. And he talked to me about how, you know, his parents had grown up in the 60s, and they loved the outdoors. They were kind of hippies growing up, and so that, you know, they did a lot of vacations where they did a lot of hiking and seeing, you know, the wilderness. And they had spent some time in Yosemite, and they'd planned a day to go up to May Lake, which is a really high up lake, from what I understand, near Mount Hoffman in Yosemite. And it was a rainy day when they started out. It was cloudy and rainy and kind of overcast and cold. And the family hiked up to the edge of May Lake, and his younger sister was complaining and sick and not feeling good. And him and his older brother were really looking forward to hiking up to the top of Mount Hoffman. There was a good trail that went up there. And they stopped at the lake, and his sister got some granola and got feeling a little better, but she didn't want to go on. And the parents were a little wary of letting the boys go on alone, but they said, you know, the dad says, okay, we're going to walk back to the car. back to the vehicle with your sister. You guys, you know, hike up to the top and then come back. Stay on the trail. Don't leave the trail. Don't leave each other. You know, just go up there and come back. And they said, okay. So the parents headed back with his little sister towards the parking lot, and they headed around the lake. Well, they got around, and where his older brother Tim thought that the trail would split, and one would go up to the top of Mount Hoffman and one would go down to towards the lake, it didn't split. And so his brother was like, let's go cut the brush and see if we can find the trail. So, you know, that's the first thing the parents said, don't leave the trail. And they left the trail. He said that was the first thing we did that my dad told us not to do. And they're making their way along through the brush, and, you know, they're climbing over logs. It's not, you know, he's struggling, his brother's struggling, and they get over towards the lake, and his brother says, well, the trail's got to be either this way, you know, to the right or to the left. He told Caden, you go down along this way, a couple hundred yards, I'll go this way a couple hundred yards, and then we'll come back, and one of us has got to hit the trail. So that was the second thing they did that their dad told them not to do, was split up. So, but he did. He headed along towards the lake. Caden did. His brother headed the other direction. And about this time, it started getting cloudy and a little bit more, you know, rainy, a little bit more, you know, heavy rain. And he's walking along down there, and the mountain's on his right side. And, you know, he's climbing through logs and just trying to make his way to find this trail. And he stops, and there's almost like a big rock pile towards the hill, not very far from him. And he catches some movement, and he looks towards it. And at first he can't really see anything on this rock pile. And then all of a sudden he sees this creature, and it's slowly crawling over the top of the rock pile towards him. And he said it was about the size of a man, long arms, gray, no clothes on, and the head, no hair on whatsoever. Instead of where our ears are, it was more of an indent with holes, just a slit for a mouth, no nose, and big eyes, but its eyes are closed. And he said, you know, when I was interviewing, he was talking about how if you see a sloth on the ground with its big long arms trying to pull itself really slowly along the ground, that's what it reminded him of. It's just a big sloth kind of, and he's in shock. Obviously it's not that far from him. And he trips, he backs up because he's trying to back away from this creature, and he trips, rolls and stands up. And when he does, you know, he makes a little, you know, a little scream, and he looks back to the creature, and the creature's opened its eyes, but excuse me, its big eyes are milky white. Like it's blind, like it has cataracts or whatever. It's like it can't see, but it's heard him fall down and make his little scream. So it's kind of facing towards him, but it's swaying its head back and forth like it's listening for him. He obviously at this point has had enough. He just heads towards his brother, just screaming at the top of his lungs. Gets to his brother, runs past his brother, and he's just running to the trail. He's like, all I could think of, just get to the trail. So his brother finally catches him at the trail, and he says, I'm blubbering, I'm crying, I'm just in shock. Finally calmed down and explained to my brother what I've seen. I saw a monster, you know, it was over there, it was crying, you know. And his brother's like, let's go see. And he's like, no, uh-uh. And so again, he runs, headed down the trail running, and his brother follows him and finally convinces his brother. He leaves. He's like, you can stay, whatever, I'm out of here, and leaves. Goes down, you know, tries to explain to his parents. His parents, you know, kind of not sure what he saw, but he says it's very vivid, even in his imagination, or not in his imagination, but in his mind's eye now, that he can see this creature. The big milky eyes, obviously deaf, pale, same color as the rock formation almost, long arms creeping over it, and just the horror of the whole thing. it was burned in his memory forever. He says, I'll never forget that thing. If somebody had told me, he said, that they had seen it, I would have a really hard time believing them. But as I've seen it myself, I know what I saw. Even if I can't tell you what it was, I know exactly what it looked like, what it was, you know, and it just scared the heck out of him. And, you know, scarred him. He says, I've been scarred for life about going in the wilderness and of just a fear of seeing this creature again. It's kind of, he called it like this golem type creature and just frightening. But what I find just fascinating about it is again, his detail, the way it kind of crept along the ground like a sloth, the way, you know, its head didn't have, you know, any hair, no ears, but kind of in human form, and its big milky white eyes like it was blind, and the way it shifted its head back and forth to listen for him again, almost like a predator would, looking for its prey. It was that, like you say, that was a really kind of spooky one to read. That was a spooky one to hear and talk to him about.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of a bag of nope in there for me in that one. You know that,
right?
It kind of reminds me, not 100%, but like of the Hadals in The Descent. The description of those things, which is, of course, one of my favorite books of all time. But right. Do I want the Hadals to be real? No, but I'm not ever going to go in a cave to find out if they are. So I'm good. But see if they're coming out, which actually, now that I say that, they actually did come out to get free.
Right.
Anyway, but this thing, it was almost like, because the thing that really stood out was, in fact, that, you know, the shifting back and forth, and it was like it was going off the vibrations of his movement, maybe, which is really super creepy. And
right.
It crawling across the rocks like that. And I have to say also, before we switch to the Patreon stuff, is that the illustrations in the book are done by your daughter, and they are incredible.
Yeah, by my niece, yes.
Oh, your niece. That's niece. Right. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. No, it's okay. It's my wife's niece. Yeah. Kate does such a fantastic job. And I just talked to her again. She's going to do my next book as well. And yeah, she's just an amazing artist. I love it when she, you know, she does these. There's one that she did of a Bigfoot that was for my thing. And I want to have that made into a great big thing to hang on my walls.
Yeah.
She just did an amazing job. So.
I do not blame you. That is a stunning illustration of that Bigfoot in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, even this one for the Yosemite Monster, you know how it looks kind of segmented like a rockwood or something. I'm like, that is exactly what I saw in my mind.
Right.
She really captures that. So, one thing I wanted to ask about this area, I'm assuming it's maybe kind of a well-traveled area there. I mean, May Lake near Mount Hoffman, I don't know much about that area at all, but I'm assuming most places in Yosemite might be kind of busy. So, you know, I'm just wondering if anybody, of course, please get in touch with me, and I'll pass it along to John. If you've come across anything like this, let me know, and I'll let John know. We want to hear about this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I always look. It's one thing that I find that's fascinating. I don't know if you've had experience this or not, but I'll come across a story like this, and I'll publish it, and you know, you think it's a one off kind of thing, and then all of a sudden you have people contact you that's like, I thought I was the only one that ever saw this, or I was the only one that ever had this happen. I've had that happen quite a bit with, you know, stories of especially with stories of people pretending to be kids' cousins or friends trying to lure them off. I wrote one story about a young man who, when he was a kid and camping, something tried to lure him off pretending to be his cousin. And I thought that was kind of a one-off. And then all of a sudden I had a ton of stories where people, no, that happened to me. I had something pretending to be my friend or my cousin trying to lure me off into either a building or something. So, yeah, if you've heard anything or have seen anything else about a creature like this, please let us know. We would love to hear it. So,
these other, whatever they are, the others, we'll call them, these others, do they look 100% like the other person, or is there something kind of off about them?
They look just like the cousin. They look just like the cousin. One thing that I've noticed in all the stories is they motion for them to follow them, but they don't talk. They never speak. They just motion, to follow them. So they may look just like their cousin, but they don't speak, at least in the stories that I've interviewed people. They're either trying to lure them into the forest. This has happened quite a bit, or into abandoned buildings. I've interviewed people with that happening. These mimics or whatever you want to call them. But yeah, definitely the kids get a feeling that there's something off because they don't talk to them. They're always just out of, reach where they're, luring them to the next, next corner, then to the next corner. And so it's, those are really creepy stories too.
Oh my goodness. That reminds me of that great commercial that they didn't play it as much this year, which was a bummer, but it's the kids running away from the murderer and then they see the shed full of the saws and the knives hanging. They're like, "Hey, let's go in there." It's like, "Don't follow the mimic into the abandoned building, please."
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do it. You know, and here I go. This might be a record. The third time I brought up the 411, but that reminds me, these mimics, of the kid that was in the cave with a lady. I think he thought it was his grandmother, but that
Oh,
she
yeah.
had the bolts in her neck, right? Like with sparks coming out and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. And they wanted him to go to the bathroom in the cup or something. And it's like,
Right.
no. Yeah, it was a really that was a really strange one that them. And they found that kid. You know, they searched forever, and then they found him basically in the camp where he went missing, like under the brush, not very far. So it was like he was not there for a long time, and then just put where they could find him. That one was a really strange
Yeah.
story. Love those missing 411 books.
I do too. I absolutely do too, because they run the gamut from what you could just probably classify more like true crime, and then you have these other stories like the mimics and bolts and bears and all kinds of things going on, and then they're brought back. Yeah, I don't know, but I miss the woods. That's all I know, John, is
Yeah,
I miss being near the
exactly.
woods. I mean, the desert can be creepy too, but
Right.
I don't. It's a long ways for me to get to anywhere with the woods, and it's kind of sad. But well, John, you will be sticking around with me for my patrons. But before we close out, Maine, of course, let everyone know where to find you, how to contact you, of course, with more encounter stories for upcoming books, and where to find the books.
Yes, so you can get a hold of me on my website, strangerbridgerland.com. Just look that up. It has information about my books, about me, how to contact me, about speaking engagements, and about the upcoming Para X next year. There's a lot of information there. You can find my books on Amazon. Just look up Stranger Bridgerland book series. There are all five in there. And those are the best ways to get a hold of me and contact me and find my books. I do have a few still. I have a few of the books on Audible as well. If you're more of a listener than a reader, then you can find most of them on there as well. So.
Well, John, thanks so much for coming on. And let's keep this party going, shall we?
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, Shannon.
Well, I'm so and so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little fire. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is, is it? Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. don't believe literally in reincarnation, that after your funeral, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen viewed it this way. He said, spring does not become summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.